Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, if this is really the election year that blows up the notion that we live in red America and blue America, I think it'll make my next guest very happy. Bill Bishop, a journalist from Austin, Texas, has co-authored a book that says Americans have been segregating ourselves politically for 30 years. As a result, he says, of more choice and the breakdown of trust in old institutions, we have voted with our mortgage payments to live among people who are like ourselves politically, depleting the political middle, making compromise more difficult, distrust more rampant, and leaving precious few swing voters for presidential elections like this. But this book was written before John McCain and apparently Barack Obama became the presidential nominees, both with their messages of ending the partisan divide. The book is called The Big Sort: Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Bill Bishop, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you very much, Brian.
You compare landslide election counties in 1976 and 2004 as perhaps your most telling stat. What's a landslide county?
Well, this is the way we did all, Bob Cushing, our statistician, did all these calculations, and the easiest way we had to explain what was going on was that we compared the number of voters who lived in places where a really close election wasn't close at all. So in 1976, you had about, which was Carter and Ford, right? It was a 50-50 election, and about a quarter of the people at that time lived in a place where the election was won by either Carter or Ford by more than 20 percentage points. And that sort of, that increased in almost a stair-step fashion in really close elections, so that by 2004, about half the people in the United States in an equally close election lived in a place where the election wasn't close at all, was more than 20 percentage points.
You cite 1965 as a turning point on the road to this kind of self-segregated America. What happened in 1965?
Boy, 1965. What? I mean, I think the point of the Big Sort was the election results that we just talked about are kind of the tail of the dog. And what we could see in 1965 was how the dog was shaking, and all the old ways of living and of defining society and politics began to break down. For example, in 1965, mainline American churches, like the Lutherans and the Episcopals and the Presbyterians, began to lose members for the first time in 200 years. Divorce rates began to go up. Crime rates began to go up. Trust in government declined, began a decline that has continued to this day. Clubs that Americans had formed for generations, the Rebeccas and the Masons and Robert Putnam's bowling leagues, it was at that point that they began to lose membership and following. And so everything kind of broke apart. And what we found was that when people came back together again in the 1970s, it was in a kind of a miniatured way, so that clubs began to represent points of view rather than groups of people, and neighborhoods began over time to reflect lifestyles, certain kinds of lifestyles, and our politics became more ideological. People began to align with the political party in a more left and right fashion, and the parties began to separate nationally in terms of there was less crossover between the parties. So we saw this after the World War II until 1970, America was coming together, and from 1970 until now, it was coming apart.
Listeners, do you agree with Bill Bishop that this is what happened? Looking at your own life choices, looking at those of your parents or your children, is America the land of the Big Sort, as this book title would have it? Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart is the subtitle of Bill Bishop's book, give us a call, talk about your experiences with respect to this, and if you agree with his theory. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. I want to get into whether you think the Obama and McCain nominations, at least the apparent Obama nomination, means that we're crossing a threshold and turning the other way. But before we do that, I'm not completely convinced that this is what happened or this is how it happened. What you're saying is that as the old bonds of community and trust in the old institutions broke down in the 60s, we built new voluntary communities, but the voluntary communities were based on different things. They were based on political and lifestyle like-mindedness rather than something more expansive than came before.
Right. Right. And it's more lifestyle than anything else. And you can see that in the political situation we have today. Politics is now aligned with lifestyle more than with policy. And so it aligns with our neighborhoods almost exactly. And it's true in the Democratic primary in 2008, and it was true in the general election in 2004.
But is this a case of you being nostalgic for the way we never were, for a time when segregation was real by race and in the workplace by gender, and we had three television anchors who supposedly tied the nation together but didn't really?
Right. I mean, there is that. We have greater diversity in where we live. And so, I mean, there's a good and bad to this. And the good part is that we do have a greater choice about where and how to live. And if you want good public transportation, you can live in Portland, Oregon. If you want a Bible class in your high school, you can live in Odessa, Texas. The trouble is there's less communication and less understanding nationally between these increasingly disparate groups. And you can see that in Congress that has had the – in 1965, think of what LBJ was able to do with a unified – with a nation where 8 out of 10 Americans trust the government to do the right thing. He was able to pass the Voting Rights Act. He passed – it was the first time that money went for the arts and the humanities since the Great Depression. The Appalachian Regional Commission was created in the War on Poverty. And there was just this tremendous outpouring of government action for the common good, and that disappeared in 1966 and really hasn't appeared yet. And now we have a Congress where literally there is no Democrat more conservative than the most liberal Republican. There is no overlap in Congress either in the Senate or the House. And we see a Congress that is sort of beached on this balkanized electorate that is growing more extreme as they grow more like-minded and is increasingly unwilling to compromise.
But could it have turned out differently, in your opinion? Because you seem to say that the more freedom Americans got to choose their fates as individuals, the more we ran for the fringes.
Right, and the more we ran to be around others like ourselves. Given the freedom of choice, people choose to be around others like themselves, and it's true in the media, and it's true in your neighborhoods.
Right, but which, following your storyline, has made most of us dig into relatively fringe, relatively extreme politics on either left or right.
Right. That's what makes this trend so powerful is that it follows basic human nature.
But your story, yes, that follows basic human nature, that when given more freedom, because we really got more freedom when the old structures broke down in the 1960s, if you would agree to use that word,
right,
then this is what people headed for when they had more choice.
Exactly. Exactly. The life became – the world – kind of got out of control and life became miniaturized. And we, some marketers talk about hiving. The head of McDonald's talks about the country of I. And we found reinforcement around by bringing the community closer to ourselves. And that has a good effect and it has a bad effect. The bad effect is it makes us less of a nation.
Here's an alternative theory that it's economics more than the breakdown of Ozzie and Harriet America that has caused this, that the middle class has been in decline for 30 years as wealth has been concentrating in fewer hands, and those who are really wealthy are moving toward segregated, gated communities or just further and further out into the suburbs, and it's, you know, or even into kind of gated areas of the cities as some of the wealthy move back into downtown areas, and that a lot of this is the result of economics rather than liberalization of values.
Well, we have a whole chapter on economics in the book, and in fact, I mean, you're absolutely right. This was in a large part an economic migration. In 1970, people with BA degrees were relatively evenly distributed among the 300 or so American cities. Over the next 30 years, they began to congregate in particular places. So Austin picked up people with BA degrees much faster than did Cleveland or Louisville. And that had this incredible economic dislocation effect. So Austin boomed, Seattle boomed, Portland boomed because they were picking up people with BA degrees and PhDs. And the Rust Belt cities and cities that lost and rural areas lost out and went into an economic decline that continues to this day. So what we're saying is the Big Sort has had all these causes, and only the tail of it is the political effect that it ended up because we sorted economically, we sorted religiously, we sorted into markets of like minds, and only at the end of that did we end up with communities that were increasingly Republican or Democratic.
Journalist Bill Bishop, my guest on WNYC. His book is called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. And Mario in Jersey City, you're on WNYC with Bill Bishop. Hi, Mario.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I guess my comment comes to the, the reason why we basically sign up for parties. You know, I think Americans have always, you know, had this idea, this identification with the Democrat or Republican. And I'm wondering why they're kind of giving up their hand, you know, their poker hand to the politicians to kind of know how they're going to vote when, you know, probably we should all be voting in both primaries and the general election. And has that kind of caused this divisiveness?
Bill?
Well, let's think about what party choice means. A political scientist describes choosing a party this way. You go down a hall in a hotel and there are two doors and there's a party, literally a party going on behind each door, and you look in and you see the kind of people that are there. You look at their dress and what they're eating and what their facial expressions are and how their hair looks and whether you think your kids would would be good marriage partners for their kids. And then you go in, you choose a party. And it's a choice of finding those people who you're comfortable with. It's more like choosing a kind of music or a sports team rather than a policy decision. So it really is an act of self-expression to join a party, and that's why party means so much to people, is that it's not, yeah, I'm a Democrat, it's Democrats are me, or Republicans are me.
And so that's
just something, Mario, that's hard to give up.
Right, but my question really is, you know, do you pick that one party and then that party starts to get boring and it doesn't really have great ideas, et cetera, and the fact that the other party knows that you're not going to switch sides, you're not going to actually walk out that door and walk in the other door, means that they've got no incentive to innovate.
Right, or to reach across party lines into a non-existent middle. And Mario, thank you for your call. But today, all the pundits are saying that politics, which some people call Karl Rove politics, turnout-based politics rather than wooing swing voters politics, that Karl Rove politics is dead and has destroyed the Republican base to boot. Do you disagree?
Well, I think probably the war in Iraq and the Republican scandals had more to do with the destruction of or at least the low opinion ratings for the Republican Party now. We just did a poll for the Center for Rural Strategies on rural voters. 9 out of 10 rural Republicans are going to vote for John McCain. 9 out of 10 rural Democrats say they would vote for Hillary Clinton. There was a 4% undecided 6 months from the election in rural precincts over who they'd vote for in November. So the middle is there's slight shifts of 2 or 3% in groups, and the tide rises and the tide falls, and elections change. But the basic building blocks that Rove and Matt Dowd discovered in 2004 still exist.
Here's a question posted on our website. In the middle of the night, from someone who knew you were coming on today, this post is listed as 1:48 a.m. And it says, are we more polarized now than we were in 1975 when the screening of Ralph Bakshi's epic Coonskin was picketed by CORE at MoMA? Are we more polarized now than we were in 1970 when the Kent State shootings occurred? More polarized than October 1967 when Norman Mailer faced down a neo-Nazi after the March on the Pentagon, or during the 68 Democratic Convention? And she adds, seems like the country has never been so much in agreement as it is right now. That's what the majority of Americans being against the war and Bush's 29% approval rating is about, right? So what do you say to that listener?
Well, I say we can look at the numbers, and you can see that the parties are more polarized. Democrats are more liberal. Republicans are more conservative than they were in 1968 or 1976. And you can see it in the polls between either Obama and McCain or Clinton and McCain that the country is still split about 50-50.
Lewis in Ocean Grove, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lewis.
Good morning. Yes, I just recently read a Los Angeles Times op-ed piece, and the author was a liberal. She went and spoke at a college campus, and next door there was an author that was a conservative speaking in the study hall. She yearned to go to the room next door and speak to those students, and wished the author would come next door and speak to her students. And the reason why the piece was similar to what you guys are talking about mm-hmm. this morning. And I said, boy, that's what they should go on the campuses. They should bring the speakers to the other crowds, because that will stimulate conversation. That's it.
That's it. Then that's a good suggestion. Too bad they didn't actually get together and try to pull it off. So when we continue in a minute, Bill, hold the thought, because we have to take a break. But I want to go right there when we come back and talk about what you think solutions are to this problem, and also look at why you think McCain and Obama, with their messages of postpartisanship, are getting their party's nominations, apparently, and whether you think that means we're crossing some kind of a threshold. So we continue with Bill Bishop, author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with journalist Bill Bishop from Austin, Texas, author of a new book called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Bill, what about the McCain nomination? What about the apparent Obama nomination running against the idea of a red and blue America? Is this a watershed election? Your book was completed, I'm sure, just before the primary season. Are they refuting your theory to some degree by the success of these particular candidates rather than ones from other wings of their parties?
Well, as far as I know, none of my neighbors in my highly Democratic neighborhood have moved to Lubbock or Amarillo, and I doubt many of your listeners in Manhattan are moving to Nebraska or South Dakota. So, you know, the general geographic distribution of people remains the same, and
is there a yearning for something else on a political level?
There's always been a yearning. That's why Bill Clinton ran. Americans have a feeling that the process of government isn't fair, and they have long had a feeling that our representatives don't compromise and don't work for the best outcomes for the nation, and so you see constantly outsiders. And this is why it's so unusual to have senators actually make it, why governors have been good candidates, because they're seen as outside the system. So Clinton does well as the man from Hope, and George Bush came from my hometown is the uniter, not the divider. And now we have another man from Hope from Chicago and the maverick from Arizona. And what the polls show is that Pew did a poll on this exactly a year ago. They found that both Democrats and Republicans think that there should be more compromise in the nation. And what they think is Democrats think Republicans need to compromise, and Republicans think that Democrats need to compromise. And because when Democrats and Republicans look around them, they see agreement. I see agreement in my neighborhood, so it must be some weirdos out in some other part of the country that are screwing things up. And that's the way we think. And so when people get into office, they're confronted with a Congress and people who represent overwhelming majorities in congressional districts and states. And the actual decision-making crashes on these rocks of like-minded populations.
All right. You know what we're going to do? I'm going to read a very provocative comment from our comments page that backs up your theory, and we're going to clear the board of our current callers and just ask if you have chosen where you live based at all on the lifestyle or the politics of your neighbors. Have you chosen where you live based on the lifestyle or the politics of your neighbors? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And here's that comment. Bill, you'll be really interested in this one. This comes from a listener in New Jersey who writes, "My husband and I chose Plainfield after looking at the election maps for 2000 and 2004. We ruled out any county or city that went for Gore and Kerry by less than 65%. We are happy to not have to be reminded every day of what they have done to our country. The problem with this country is not partisanship. The problem is that the wrong people have been in power." What do you think about that?
Sounds like my neighborhood. But here's the and so some people are making explicit choices. But here's the number out of the 2008 primary, Brian, that I think is very telling, and this is news. No one knows this except for me and my stats guy.
Yes.
And that is that, remember the election between Bush and Kerry, half the people lived in landslide counties.
Mm-hmm.
In the election between Clinton and Obama, 49% of the people live in a county that either Clinton or Obama won by 20 percentage points or more.
Uh-huh.
The same split exists in the Democratic primary that existed in the Republican and Democratic general election in 2004, and it exists in the same geography.
But then, do you think that this represents the showing of some kind of major cleavage within the Democratic Party that's going to become, you know, more self-segregating of America over the future? And the mainstream media just didn't pick up on it until Obama and Clinton ran against each other and teased it out of the woodwork.
Well, the mainstream media looks at exit polls, and exit polls ask demographic questions, not lifestyle questions. And the lifestyle is pushing this. That's why the same split appears in both places. What both parties are going to have to deal with is Obama has to find his vote comes out of the cities, and people in the cities, like your Plainfield commenter, are going to distrust anybody who finds favor in the countryside. And McCain has the opposite problem. He needs to reach into those inner suburbs in the cities to gain votes, but by doing that, by being more of an environmentalist being a little softer on the social issues, he begins to lose people, lifestyle groups that have been Republican supporters. So those candidates are being tugged by the two wings of their party that are reflected in the geography of the country.
Let's hear a few more people's lifestyle choice stories.
Great. That's a great question.
Dennis in Somerset, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Thank you for putting me on.
Sure.
Yes, I presently live in central New Jersey, which I think in my county, Somerset, is fairly Republican, although I guess the answer to your question kind of depends on the locale you're talking about. I think my immediate friends and my immediate neighborhood are probably more liberal than the county in general. But be that as it may, I'm considering relocating from New Jersey. I've looked in a lot of places and definitely use political leanings as one criteria. My current plans are to move to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which is a liberal bastion in the middle of a conservative state. And that was definitely a factor in my decision.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot. Who else? Let's see. This is Eddie. Eddie in Brooklyn Heights. You're on WNYC. Hi, Eddie.
Hello. I came here in 1975 from East Texas, and I felt like it was, I was living in Dallas at the time, and I felt like it was extremely conservative, even though I didn't really know that that's what I thought it was. I just thought it was very repressive, and I was right. And I live in Brooklyn Heights, which I guess is fairly liberal. It's certainly more liberal than...
I guess you could say that.
Yeah. and one thing that I really see happening since I'm in, still in touch with people from Texas is that the religious right people or the conservative Christians in Texas never change. They are so entrenched in what they have always believed that they don't have any, there's no room for them to see anything outside of their belief. And I don't know how that's ever going to change.
And what about you, Eddie? Do you now judge the religious conservatives as harshly as they may have judged you?
Yeah, I'm afraid I do. I think it's even more so because I talked to someone from there a couple of weeks ago, and I was really kind of afraid of them, and I felt like I really couldn't trust them to be honest with them. So, from my point of view, it's not that I have any beliefs that I am really stuck to. It's just that it's a defense against what they believe.
Eddie, I'm going to leave it there, but thank you. And Bill Bishop, I think, you know, whenever you get a dug-in situation, a polarized situation, each side tends to think it's a defense. Each side tends to think that the other is aggressive and in trying to impose their way on you, and that you're just trying to defend yourself against them. You address this in the book, don't you?
Well, yeah, there's a whole chapter on the social psychology of this, and the fact is that like-minded groups over time tend to become more extreme in the way that they're like-minded. So there's a subtle competition. In my neighborhood, it's not good enough to say that Bush was wrong. We have to say Bush needs to be impeached. It's not enough to say Republicans made mistakes. We need to say Republicans need to be investigated and there need to be criminal prosecutions. And so there's this subtle competition that takes place where you always have to be a little bit more Republican or a little bit more Democratic than the group that you're in. And that over time moves groups to be more extreme. And so then when there's no contact between those groups, as Eddie was talking about, you just have this incredible misunderstanding, and there's just no way to get those groups together.
Jane in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'm biracial, and I've lived overseas. I've lived all over the U.S. I actually chose New Brunswick because there was not only racial diversity, but there tends to be a little bit more of political diversity, but still leaning on the Democratic, you know, liberal side, but it is a university town.
So, yeah, it's Rutgers, right?
Yeah.
So when you live among a little more political diversity, do you actually have any contact with people who are maybe more conservative than you?
Yeah, and I actually appreciate that, but I would prefer that rather than being in some smaller towns where it's all conservative.
Right.
We're all white.
Thank you very much. And Jennifer in Holmdel, you're on WNYC. A lot of New Jerseyans calling in on this. Hi, Jennifer.
Yeah, but this is actually about Florida. I have a relative who happens to be gay, and when he came out, I said to him, the last thing you want to do is move to the South. And he and his partner actually purposefully relocated to South Carolina, purposefully to a very conservative area. And they are activists in that area, and they think the best thing they can do is show what good neighbors they can be and good people as a, you know, sort of opposite of what your guest is saying, is that they are infiltrating a conservative neighborhood.
So they're the exception, Bill, right?
Well, they would be making the political move in the opposite direction. So they recognize what's going on and have have decided to take action against it. It's fascinating.
Still choosing, though, on with a consciousness of that America is polarized this way by housing.
And right.
Jennifer, thank you very much. So what do you think, before you go, and my guest is Bill Bishop, author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart, and Jennifer mentions her gay relative, and we're going to be talking in a couple of minutes to William Eskridge, Yale law professor, who's an expert on gay marriage, about the directive from Governor Patterson that New York will now recognize gay marriages performed elsewhere. And Bill, I guess it's no coincidence, even referencing that story, that it's California where the decision for gay marriage was made in the courts. It's Massachusetts. Now it's the governor of New York taking another step. It's not Missouri. It's not Arkansas. It's not Texas, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. You see this all over. I mean, of course, even within California, 17 counties in California are getting more Democratic. 30 are becoming more Republican.
Yeah.
So within states, there's that split. But
yeah, well,
this is
California
exactly
is
what
not
you're seeing.
California is not so much a state as it is its own country anyway.
Well, but the important thing is exactly what you're saying, Brian, is that localities now where there's a large majority one way or another are able to take action where the nation can't.
So do you get prescriptive in this? Do you say, here's what we should do to tie America back together without losing our freedom to choose our individual lifestyles that came about in the 60s and 70s?
You know, the editors always want solutions, and I don't know what the solution is to human nature, and that's what we're dealing with. We were describing a social transformation, and I don't think there's a solution to that. There are ways to relearn disagreement, and the one place where we do run up against people who disagree with us is at work. Maybe there are ways to, we can ask people to be less. Willing to just do in their representatives if they ever compromise with the other side. But
your last chapter is called "To Marry Your Enemies." That's not
right.
Advice, I guess.
Well, that comes from an anthropological studies in Africa where these sorts of cross-cutting relationships were institutionalized. You couldn't marry within your own tribe because the tribes knew that they had to have contacts with people who were different from them. So the saying was, they are our enemies, we marry them. But it's interesting to me that like Match.com matches people based on their politics. So we don't even marry our enemies anymore.
The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart by Bill Bishop, a journalist from Austin, Texas. Very interesting stuff, very thought-provoking. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, we will drill down into the fine print of Governor Patterson's directive that New York recognize gay marriages performed elsewhere. What does it really mean for health insurance, for Social Security, for any other kind of benefits that people get? What will it mean culturally in New York State? Stay with us.